I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. And Sharon Carpenter, do you need to take roll or anything at this point?
I think I haven't. If I miss somebody, we'll catch them. We'll catch them on the back. But I've been trying to get everybody as they come in, so I think we're good.
Okay. First up on the agenda is Dr. Hendricks with whatever she's going to talk about today.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the questions because they were diverse and it allowed me to do a lot of homework and learn a lot. All right. So let's start with the time clocks. My source of information regarding time clocks happens to be Alan Perdue, and I don't know if Alan is with us, joined us today for this meeting. But Alan said he doesn't understand where a rumor was started about time clocks. There is no plan to stop using our time clocks, nor to significantly change the way we currently use them. The time clocks help the university ensure that hourly employees are fully paid for all of their work hours. So I didn't know if there were additional questions about that. Anyone? Time clocks. I mean, just show of hands on at this meeting, how many individuals clock in? Anybody? Okay, good, done. All right, Teresa, all right. So, you know, maybe that is a topic, if you feel right strongly about it, that is a topic that could be brought up and further discussed. Marie, I always turn to you for information about what our peers are doing across West Virginia. Are they also using time clocks? I would imagine they are.
I think different organizations have done it differently. We have allowed people to independently record their time. And as you said earlier, it is, you know, we've had employees in the past who, if you're not recording your time, what we don't want to have happen is having people work and not be paid for it. So that's what the time clock does. I know that was a big change. I think that was 2016 when we got those. So, yeah, there aren't any plans to have them go away. That's the way we get time into the state payroll system to get people paid.
Yeah. But any comments about this? Are there issues? In my previous job at Northwestern, instead of the actual time clocks, what we did is we asked employees to enter onto the computer, right? When they log on, what time they came in, and they could manually put that time in. You know, the issue always is it takes a while for the computer to ramp up. But, you know, if that is something, again, Cecilia, that our employees feel strongly about, then, you know, we should discuss it, pros and cons. Okay, I'm open to it. Yeah, Marie, I don't think I get paid for all the extra hours I've worked.
I suspect you do not.
But, you know.
Maybe you need a time clock.
Yeah, well, I was going to put a suggestion in the box downstairs.
We do have both capabilities, to clock in on the computer, which my student assistants and grad assistants use, or to go to a time clock somewhere in a building. And a lot of the facilities, people would use an actual time clock.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually pretty quick once you do it. But I understand the concern.
Yeah. Okay. So I really appreciate that. So why don't we go to, I'm trying to go in order here, Cecilia, which I appreciate the questions. The second question has to do with title changes for certain individuals on campus. And when do we make an announcement? When do we not make an announcement? So, Marie, Your title change was really a reflection of what your peers are currently using, right, in the system. So,
right.
Similar institutions, et cetera.
Right. It wasn't a change of duties. There was no money involved. It was just the title change to update that.
Yeah. And I'll just kind of remind everyone, we did something similar when we changed from vice president for academic affairs. We added provost because depending on the academic institution that we were interacting with, they understood exactly what a provost was or what a vice president for academic affairs was, and we happened to merge the two. And again, no difference in duties. And then the second question was about Sonia Shali and her change in title. And so I think everyone recalls, it's a sad day when Pam Stevens left us, right? So Pam left us the end of July, and Pam had, as part of her portfolio, the huge project of developing and moving forward the East Campus Loop, and that was all-encompassing. Sonia had worked side-by-side in a complementary manner with Pam over the last few years, interacting with all the members of the campus advisory committee and the community advisory committee, right? So she had the opportunity to take all the minutes for meetings and then be able to share them with everybody. So I asked Sonia to take on extra duties of taking over the East Loop. And just to give you an example of what's involved, the first thing Sonia had to do very, very quickly was expand the grant proposal request and resend it into HUD. So when we were all given this wonderful information from our senators, senatorial staff, oh, you have the money. What they meant to say was you have the right to apply for the money. Because that's what happened. Right to apply was never part of our original understanding. However, most of the projects have been awarded because those proposals were prepared. The East Loop had not been prepared and sent in. So that was the first task that Sonia had to undertake. And then, of course, everything else that's involved, demolition of the two residential old buildings, creation of a gateway entrance to the campus, and then reimagining the East Loop. We are at the beginning of this. And I will tell you, this took up a lot of Pam Stevens' time. And so I asked Sonia to take this on as, with a title change, AVP for Strategic Initiatives and Presidential Operations. This was actually a title that we saw online for other schools, individuals who take charge of large projects. So we didn't add a position. Sonia is getting an extra stipend for doing this. It's just a stipend. But the announcement for this was in the September 9th President's Points of Pride, the first story. Talking about our congressionally directed spending requests. And that's where I made this announcement. That I wanted to put it in the proper context, recognizing that we're bombarded with emails. And I'm just hoping that people have a chance every Friday to read our highlights. So I appreciate that question. So then, Cecilia, on to the focus on the additional raise in January, the most important targeted initiative that we have. So right now, as you know, we were able to raise the minimum wage for 32 of our employees. All right. So 32 employees have been advanced. Now, originally, we told our Board of Governors, and we made our financial assumptions on 39 new students being added this fall that would allow us to begin to make these raises starting in January. So we were so excited, Kelly Hart, all of us, excited when Kelly showed us that we had 85 new students, right? And this was in August. And I mean, this was a moment to celebrate. Well, we now have 11 students, 11 new students from that original 85. However, we have 25 students who deferred admission from fall to spring. So when you think about it, that brings the number to 36 new students if all were to remain here. So we continue to count our students. We look at the tuition that they're bringing in-state, out-of-state, residential student versus commuters, so that we can have a global view of how much additional revenue those students are bringing in. We will be making some increases in salary, but I can't tell you right now how many people will be affected by that starting January 1st, because these numbers are still clearing. I think we were, Kelly, I'm not speaking for you, but I think we were taken back that we lost so many students from that original 85. And you were able to really save 11 who had received notice for you were going to be dropped for non-payment. I mean, I think you really tried to save many, many students who received that note. And that's what we're dealing with right now, the financial challenges that our students face. And our goal is to bring in as much money as we can to help them, because bringing money for those students then helps Shepherd. So, Cecilia, the best I can say is we have Scott Barton with us right now, and he's just getting started, which brings us to the next topic. Scott walks in the door. And there are two resignations of major leaders that he has to deal with. One is B. Stottlemyre, who has been here for 10 years, who's worked so hard as chief financial officer and an AVP for finance. And the other resignation was Shelly Schaefer, head of facilities. And both of their departure dates are October 28th. So Scott has been working very hard, very fast with Marie DeWalt. Marie, maybe you could tell us, the positions have been posted.
The positions are posted, applications are coming in, and both of those search committees are meeting this week.
Oh, my gosh. So if any of you happen to know of some wonderful potential new employees you'd like to see come to Shepherd in these roles, please let us know. I personally have been receiving a couple of emails from employees who used to be here who asked if they would be appropriate for the positions. And you can't be biased. I just invited them to apply for the positions they felt they had their credentials to do. But I thought it was so nice. They once worked here and they want to come back. So that made me feel pretty good. But anyway, we're going to miss Bea and Shelley. There's no question about it, really. So that is just sad. Now, there's a survey that has been conducted by Dr. Marie DeWalt and her colleagues regarding expanding the staff council from CEC to full staff. And Marie, would you be kind enough to share results with us?
I would. And I should I want to mention that the team that's working on this is Cecilia, Barb Candalis, and Jack Shaw. As well as
thank
me.
You.
So
okay,
we had a pretty good turnout, a pretty good response rate, I thought, for the survey. We had 60 people, which is about a quarter of our staff, so that's pretty good. And out of that, 20 9% of non-classified responded and 20% of classified responded. So of the responses then, and Sharon, I can give you this later if it's hard to catch for the minutes. So 35% of the responses were from classified staff, 65% were from non-classified staff. So out of all of the responses, 70% of the respondents said yes, that they thought that we should proceed to form a staff council joining classified and non-classified. 18% said no, and 12% said they had no opinion.
Okay. So where do we go from here, Marie?
Well, I think the next step is to develop a framework of what this would actually look like. And Cecilia agreed to draft a document to start with. And we'll try to get that in shape to bring, I guess, to the ELT and go from there. It does require the approval of the assembly if we proceed to do that.
Okay. Well, that's great. And I think it'll be wonderful to have this information in the minutes from the CEC Council. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Oh, this is great. Thank you. I don't really see a downside to doing this, but I think it's important to understand the concerns of those individuals who were not in favor. So, well, and I know, you know, it's anonymous, so that'll be difficult to do. So we'll just hope over time, right, that we're able to convince them that we want to be more inclusive. Okay, good. Yeah, Jane.
So I'm kind of wavering with the whole conversation and the transition. I went back into the ASA rep again for the classified employees. And the real concern is whether or not Shepherd would remain in in code for the classified employees. Because if you blend a staff, non-classified and classified, by code, only classified would be able to vote. If I misunderstood, I'm sorry. I thought originally there was an idea to create two separate councils, not to merge classified with non-classified. Am I misunderstanding?
Yeah, I understood the intent was to still have one staff meeting, but it would be comprised of both groups. But the question of representation and voting, it truly, those are the issues to address.
Well,
yes, go ahead.
Jane, if I could address that briefly. I think the critical thing to be consistent with code is that we would have to have only classified staff elect a classified staff representative to the Board of Governors. That's the critical piece. It's getting the classified staff representative on the board elected by classified staff.
I would add probably that might be true for the ASA rep as well. Jane would have to address that because it is also in code.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, hasn't there been another West Virginia school who has gone for an inclusive council? What have they done?
Actually, it's interesting you asked that. So I go on October 17th to the next ASA meeting, and I wanted to bring this up. There's many different opinions and ideas, and there's some real passion behind the ASA reps also for the classified staff. And I think it's because of the history and how it evolved and where do you go from here? Because I think if you would ask most of the classified employees at this point, we all want our full staff support, classified and non-classified. I think part of the issue comes down, President Hendricks, where is my boss classified or non-classified? can I be fully supported by the issues that come up to classified employees and feel comfortable doing that in the presence of my boss on a staff council? So that might be one of the issues. That's one of the things we've heard before. I'm sure there may be other, but I would like to have my input to that committee now that I'm, quote, the ACER rep, so that I have a better understanding of where this dialogue's going with Cecilia and Barb and Jack Shaw.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Especially if changes are coming about from those decisions.
Yeah. I think to answer the question you asked, Dr. Hendricks, there are, I think we found 8 at least schools that have done this. The first one was West Liberty. I was ACER rep when that happened, and they just declared everyone non-classified and created a staff council, and ASA accepted whoever they sent down there and kept them involved at that time. I assume they still are. So, and as far, I'm going to say something about the your boss being on the staff council issue. I've been here over 30 years. When I first started here, everybody was classified. Literally everybody but a very few people. The president wasn't, some of the vice presidents, but everybody could serve on the staff council. And I don't know if back then people were worried about their bosses being on the council or not, but they certainly could be, and they were. So it's not a new idea to do something like this.
I would like to just interject and make sure that we're clear. We are not talking about making all of the staff non-classified. What Cecilia is talking about is there are at least 8 institutions who have done that. That is not at all part of this discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we were honestly, we just wanted to make sure everyone felt invited to a staff meeting. And the only regular staff meeting is CEC. And I know that you've been very generous in inviting everyone. And I think people feel involved, but there is the voting issue, right? There's a voting issue. And will their voices be represented? So, Jane, anything additionally you can find out, we would appreciate learning. Yeah, good.
Absolutely.
Very good. Oh, good. So, Cecilia, I think those were the questions that you gave me for homework, and I did my best. But everyone was so helpful. I really appreciate it.
Does anyone else have any other questions or comments for Dr. Hendricks?
Yes, I have. My question is, it doesn't have anything to do with Marie or Sonia, but all of the other people who got title changes and so forth, were they compensated for their title changes?
So can we be a little bit more specific? Are we referring to Dr. Best and Dr. Howard Bostick?
No. I'm referring to Holly's area, for instance, or anyone else who got any change that we may or may not know.
Well, that's a good question. I do not have the answer to that. Marie, I don't know if you do.
Well, I think the short answer is that title changes don't necessarily come with a change in salary, and sometimes they do.
But I just don't have the specific answer to that. You know, for better or for worse, all salaries are made public right here at the university throughout West Virginia. In the state of West Virginia, there's only one group I'm aware of that knows how to hide parts of salaries, and they do it through their research corporation, which is very interesting. And I won't say who, but you might imagine. So you'll see a base salary listed, and then you have to work pretty hard to get to the other 501c3 to get the other part of the salary. Here at Shepherd University, we do not do that. So at the end of the year, when you want to look up salaries, it's everything that you'll see there. Very transparent.
No, the reason why I had asked that is because of the $1,000 that everybody got. And then we were told that was all that could be offered at this time. But if you have other money that's being divvied out because of title changes, because of duties, we just don't understand where does that money come from when we're held down to the $1,000 limit and it's contingent on enrollment, whether we get any other compensation.
Yeah. So I'm glad you clarified that. So if there is extra money associated with a title change, and usually that's a duty change too, then those funds have to come from a division's budget. There's not a general source here where we say, okay, here you go. It has to come. So that means a certain division had to decide within that division, were they not going to make a new hire? Were they going to take money associated with one position that they're not going to fill? And were they going to divvy those funds out? We really are trying to keep different divisions, colleges, departments, et cetera, to a zero-sum game. But they're allowed to work within their budgets.
One last question. I read on Metro that the governor is indicating that there will be a possible another 5% increase that he's trying to interject next year. So how would we come in, and how can they do something to give us more money so that we as an institution can get the same thing that everyone else is getting?
Yeah, we saw that too. I think Alan Perdue brought that to our attention. And what we have to do is we, as we did last year, as soon as we heard the rumor about the increase, but that was kind of late. This year it's earlier, I must admit. We are going to specifically tell the governor how much it costs to make that raise. Not that anyone's asking for that information, but we are going to start early and often continuing to make that information available. It's very difficult when the governor's office only gives you a small percentage of what we need to make the raise that is announced to the entire state. But yeah, we saw the same thing that you did. So we're working toward it. I mean, we only can go up, and we need to. So we're all part of that plan.
Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate that. Cecilia, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to answer the questions and talk with everyone.